greeting everyone. My deepest respect and to all of you. Yesterday I have been sitting here and tears just coming down my eyes and I couldn't stop it. And it says there's so much of the a feeling of gratitude and a feeling of touch deeply in my heart and for what all of you was trying to do from this side of the world. Somehow I feel the heart of Ajahn Chah from the first time I met him. The day that I was, entwined in between Dr. Burns and myself when we met at the, when I was very young, at the marble temples in Bangkok. I was interested in Buddhism then, and I went there, and Dr. Burns heard about this place named Ajahn Chah, and he invited me to come with him. And there was a flood or something happened in Lubon, and I look at him like, who do you think I am? I'm a lady, a Thai lady. I'm not going off to with anyone like that. And so I kind of turned off from that. And then 10 years later, I followed some very important person, and they went to this interesting temple, and I didn't even know there was the same temples. So I went in there when Ajahn Chah wasn't there. So I went and I think I met with Ajahn Liam. But I know I have to ask a question. And everybody said, you better hurry up because this woman is a wife of someone very important and they're all waiting for me in the bus. But I know I have to go in there in that things and talk to someone. And Ajahn Liam was just sitting there. And so I said, what are we supposed to do, or what am I supposed to do with my suffering? And then he just so gently kind of leaned over and just sit, you know, kind of whispering something to me in a very, I didn't hear what he's trying to say, but I just like the way he talks to me. So I had to run after the bus, and then that was like 10 years later. Then I get married, come here and being with a Canadian man and live in a very nice environment, and my husband is a realtor and I have all the things that I want to have, two houses and cars and the BMWs and and job to run around like busy person, and I did very well on that. And then and then one day it was between North Vancouver and West Vancouver, and in Vancouver we have this old bridge called the Lionsgate Bridge. And one of these mornings, something hit me in the middle of on the bridge. Very powerful. And I just know all of this is nothing. And I just knew it. And I was like, where are you going to go from here? So a few days later in the morning, I start to cry. And I just like, I wanted to meet a teacher. I wanted to just see the rope of some kind. I don't care who the monk's going to be. I'm not particularly choosing it now. And a few days later, someone called me and said, Kunan, he hardly talked to me, actually, and he said, there was a good monk come over in Vancouver. Would you like to come and visit? Then I know, that's him. I don't even know him. And sure enough, my husband's always late. So we will go to this big hall, and it's at UBC, and I've never been there before, and everybody was quiet, silence, and then the door opened. I come inside, and I just see Ajahn Chah and Ajahn Papagaro and Ajahn Thiyadamo sitting on the top, and everybody was quiet. And I just walk around everybody, and I just go right in front of him. I bow, and I just look up to him, and he just smiled, and he had this, you know, like acknowledgement. Then I knew I'm his. Hook, line, and sinker. I belong to him, and I didn't even know that. And then later on, he said, come to Bangkok, come to Thailand. So right away, a few weeks after that, I took off and went to Thailand. But I had to chase after him. Me and my sister will find him because he was not at Nampapong. He wasn't here and there. I might just wait until one day I went and visited with him and one of the people, his disciple in Bangkok. And then I went there and bowed and just smiled, look at him. And he said, good, you should come to Nampapong. And then I have my little camera with me, and I said to him, I said, can I take your pictures? And he said, yes. And he took off his teeth. and he let me have that picture of him. So I can maybe start sharing some of that picture, if you don't mind. It's a beautiful picture. He just put his hand on his heart, and he just really interesting posture. when I went there with him, I stayed with him for a few days, and then he just said to my sister, he said, you don't need to hold her hands. You go home, go back to Bangkok, leave her here alone. And so I stayed with this big house by myself, and it's a place for about 10 people to stay with the guest house in the woods on the nun side. And then he said to me, he said, go and talk to that nun, the German nun. She's not happy. So I talked with her all night long. And then next day I came over to Ajahn Chah, and Ajahn Chah said, so have you talked to her? And then he said, yes. So I said, okay. Then he asked a Kamfa to take me to visit with Ajahn Chakaro and Ajahn Pasano. And he said, stay there. I don't know what he's trying to do to me, but anyway, I did. And Mechi, the old nun, went with me to keep me company. Downstairs, there was a box of the body of Tukata's mother, who haven't been cremated. And upstairs, we sleep upstairs, and every time we look down, there was a body. and there's nobody there except me and Mechi. And so sometimes I just scratched the wall, and I said, Mechi, are you still sleeping? She said, no. And I said to her, I said, I'm quite afraid of the ghost, you know. And she said, well, look at me. I'm like a ghost myself. She said, I look like a ghost. If you look at me and you're not afraid, then you should be fine. And then a few days later, he sent someone to take me back. And I'm very happy with what's going on. I went to him one day, and my mind was just taking on a big leap by thinking that now I'm going to have someone building the house. Actually, I can buy a house, and I'm going to invite a monk over, and then I tell him a little bit about that, and everybody heard about it, and he just fine. He let me go on and on, and my mind started to really take over my ego, actually. So one day he sit up on the thing, on the bench, and then he was talking to the Thai people who came, and he turned his back to me, and my mind between me and my sister, I just go on about plan to be a very important person in Vancouver, and then the monk will come and they will do this and do that, and I will be a very important person. He turned around instantly and just gave it to me. He was so brutal. He said, do you think that you can do all of that? Who you think you are? And so on and so forth. And those Thai people just didn't know what happened. Because from one hand, he was so beautiful and kind. And he just turned around. And I think I went hot and cold and then die and then born again. I went through the whole process of, I have a teacher. He is actually did it because he loves me. And then I went through my head. And then finally I gave in. It takes me about 3 minutes to 5 minutes for my raging, embarrassment, humiliated, back to normal and then accepting it and love him. And that moment, I just, in my mind, because I can't do that, I could just sit like this, so I just, in my mind, I went to him in his foot, and I bow. And in my mind, after I bow, I looked up, and he just turned, and he had a smile on his face. And he nodded. So then I know that this is a teacher who knows everything's about me, and there is no way that I can get away with him. And that's how it's all happening. And then I came here, and then this and that happened. And then I have people that want to receive the same thing that I got it from Ajahn Chah. So I'm more than happy to give them. And then they will leave me alone. I think that's just enough for them. Thank you.
My brother shared about when he came with Ajahn Chah to Seattle, and I was very blessed to be part of the trip to Mount Rainier the day that he was talking about, and I remember some of the things that Lumpa said, and one of the things is we were going up to the mountain, there were joggers going along, and he looked out and he says, "Where are they running to?" And at some point in that day, he was in the back seat. Paul, were you with us that day? I think guarding the house. So my brother and Lumpa were in the back seat, and I was in the front seat with my parents. And Lumpa started giggling. We hadn't been talking about anything. He just started giggling. And then I started giggling. And I don't know how long it went on for, just the two of us giggling. I have no idea why he was giggling. I don't even know why I was giggling. But there was just something so lovely about it. And I think about that from time to time. And just as I did when they came back from the airport, the experience after our grandmother went up and grabbed her grandson, they came back to my parents' house and they arrived before I did. And walking into the door, I hadn't seen my brother since he had been a monk. It had been about 8 years. I'd never been around any sort of monastic traditions, let alone Buddhism. And I opened the front door to my parents' house, and the energy that I felt, his presence, was unbelievable. I had never experienced anything like that before. It was quite powerful, and it was lovely, a lovely feeling. And I knew that he was quite extraordinary, and it was lovely to be with him. And before they left, I just wanted to share one other Mount Rainier story. When I believe that was the first time he'd seen snow, and he called it the sawdust of water. Sawdust of water, yeah. The day that they left, we were doing the meal, and I believe it was just it was just my parents and myself and my brother, and maybe Paul was there. I don't remember a lot of people being around. And they chanted the blessing, and he asked for forgiveness of anything that he may have done to offend us or hurt us. And I couldn't believe how anybody could possibly, like him, could think that he would have offended anything, and his genuine humility so touched me, and tears just started streaming down my face, and I started crying, and he looked up at me and he said, "If you cry a little bit, it's good. If you cry a lot, you're a fool." Thank you.
Sister Sindra?
As I say, I haven't actually met Ajahn Chah in person, not in flesh, but since I have the microphone, I can just say how wonderful this weekend has been, and how much I have enjoyed it. And even though I have heard some of the stories before, it's kind of reminded me of my father when he used to tell us stories, and we heard it 20 times where we could never get tired of it. We kept asking him for the same old story again and again and again because we just enjoyed it. And I had the same feeling, like we could hear the stories of Ajahn Chah again and again and again, and they've still touched our heart and inspire us to go on. And I was very happy to hear also Tanisra, still call her Sister Tanisra. Tanisra's story, because I remember she told me this, her experience when we were quite young in the training in the Anagarika, and we were quite good friends, and we shared a lots of giggles together. I won't tell you the details of the result of it, because that would be embarrassing, but no. But we did share, and I was saying this to Ajahn Amaru yesterday, how, you know, this kind of, in a way, we're like, I feel like one of Lumpo Cha's daughter, kind of, maybe right a bit far down the line, but and Ajahn Amaru was saying the story of how we giggled together, and Ajahn Amaru said, "Why did you giggle so much?" I said, "I don't know. I mean, you know, when we entered this life, I mean, it was just, everything was so funny, and I mean, you know, Tanisra, she was the next hippie, and she'd been really living this kind of free life, and I was kind of eccentric and extrovert, you know, ex-dancer and so on, and we entered in this kind of little kitchen together with all these form angeli and all these men and all this kind of thing to do and not to do, and we just, every day we just had to process the whole thing and crack up, you know, for about an hour, non-stop, just to get through the day. So it was quite wonderful just to hear this story again and to be reminded of what we've been through together, which was a lot of the time, actually a lot of happy memory, even though it was a hell of a life at the beginning. Sister Jitendra said in the middle and the end. Careful, the truth is coming out. So I like to leave this on those words. Just thank you for all of you being here. And
how are we doing for time? A few more minutes. If any further stories to be added, Joseph, go.
Okay. When we were up in the mountains, my family had a place up in Stevens Pass in the Cascade Mountains, and we were in the we were staying next door in a small little cabin next to the ones that my family had, and we were sitting. It was Paul, Ajahn Chah, and myself sitting there, and we were just kind of chatting informally and sitting there with his cane, and Paul started to explain that he was interested in working with some people in hospice, and, you know, people that were dying. And he was kind of building this up and how valuable it was, and, you know, to be with people that were dying and to help them and making a case. And as you can well imagine, you know, Paul kind of setting himself up for something. So Ajahn Chah kind of took all this in. Of course, he was speaking Thai, and he could speak Thai enough. So then Ajahn Chah kind of sat there for a moment, and I won't do it the same way he did. He had a rubber tip on the end of his cane, but he just kind of shoved this tip of this rubber cane right into the center of Paul's heart. You know, it just like, boom. And he just kind of held it like that, and he says, "That's a fire, a hot fire, an iron, a hot fire, an iron." He said, and then he held his other hand back and he says, "This is a nice sweet." And he said, "Do you want the sweet?" So I'll let you translate the story or the moral of it or whatever. The final one, my father was a very physical person, a very humble man, and he really loved being around Ajahn Chah, and I think it was a male figure that he grew to love from the first day that he met him. And in this cabin in the mountains, my father loved it up there, and both my parents kind of grew up on farms, and I would have probably grown up as a farmer, but my mother couldn't handle that, and so they lived in the city. But this is one of my favorite places for my father, and he loved to kind of putter and do little projects. So Ajahn Chah and I are out walking around in the forest around this cabin up on Stevens Pass, and we came back. My father was out moving these big stones, and he was very strong and healthy, so he's moving these stones around, and we're kind of standing there watching him, and my father called him Paw Norm. Paw is in Mar, these kind of like colloquial ways of speaking. It means father and mother. It's kind of like saying aunt or uncle, and it's just kind of this nice respectful way of speaking to people. And he says, Paw Norm, Kang Lang Na, Kang Lang. He says, Paw Norm. He says, you're very strong. And my dad's kind of, you know, and he's moving these rocks around. He's sweating and really kind of doing his thing. And he says, Paw Norm Dong Tam Jit Jai Kang Lang Muin Lang Gai. He says, now you need to make your heart as strong as your body. And my father just kind of, it was almost a whimper. And this just kind of wonderful, humble kind of whimper. And he says, yes, you're right. And I'll never forget that. And it was a very powerful thing for both my father and myself. I don't know how he took it to heart, but it was a wonderful, simple teaching.
So we'll take just a couple minutes to stand, stretch, and then the last piece that we'll do this afternoon before closing chanting is to talk about the very end of Lumpa Cha's life and how it was to care for him and his death and funeral and so forth. Thank you.